to the ConjiCast, the podcast that you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're talking about all things Jessica Pava, so sit back and enjoy the ConjiCast. And hey, guys, we're here with episode 6. And you know what? I'm actually pretty proud of us for making it this far, because we kind of started this podcast because we got mad. And we're still going 7 months later, so I'm pretty happy.
Wait, but I thought spawning a podcast because you were angry was the universal recipe for success on podcasts.
I mean, usually not, but I feel like the three of us, I'm sorry, I don't have a joke there. Someone else give up with a joke. I mean,
if we're going to make a bad decision, we might as well go all the way with it.
That's true. We do commit to our ridiculous decisions.
Damn right we do.
I feel like we need like power rings or, you know, moon prism power makeup, Sailor Moon wands. No. Okay.
Okay. That's too far.
I just want a transformation sequence, Brian. Okay.
It's your dream in life. I know.
I feel like I'm not asking too much. It would be great. And you know who would have a really good transformation sequence?
Hux. Kylo.
No. Yes. But that's not what I was going for. Out of the three of us, Jay would have the best one.
This is true.
I would?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yes. Jay, it's to go from your normal clothes to something super fancy and awesome looking, usually with shiny things.
Wouldn't that just be my normal clothes?
Jay, you don't dress shiny.
Sometimes I do.
Not that often.
No, it's hot. It's hot and humid in this city.
That's the point of a transformation sequence. It gives you the cape. It gives you everything.
Okay, I just wanted to argue.
Fine, argue. Be like that. I was trying to give you a compliment, Jay.
I know. I accepted it. I just wanted to make sure that we had some discussion in our podcast before we got started.
Wow.
Remind me again how we're still going 7 months later.
Commitment.
Yeah. Total
right, commitment. And hoping we'll one day get transformation sequences. Got it. Okay. So now that we've gotten on that super weird tangent, but honestly, anyone listening to this should not be surprised. I did want to point out that we're going to be doing a much lighter topic of conversation this month. It will probably include at least 70%. Okay, that's really tricky. Sounds of despair. But same time, we're doing something kind of different because we're talking about a way more minor character than we've talked about so far. So I love Jess, but I'm really not sure how this is going to work out. So wish us luck.
Disproportionately loving minor characters is kind of my entire shtick in fandom. So I feel that's like I'm going to be okay-ish at least.
That's a good point. I was just panicking while I was writing show notes. I was like, oh, wait, I can't write a whole character arc down from the game or from the film. I don't know what I'm doing. It's cool. It's all right. We're fine. All right. Also, wanted to wish all of us and any of our listeners to whom it applies happy Asian American Pacific Islander month, because it is May and we are celebrating everything Asian American Pacific Islander, because we can do that on this show.
Cheers, all right.
Yes. And in honor of that, and then there's this, I was bound to determine to make it something good and happy this month. I'm pretty sure there was something I was not as fond of that I saw, but I'm ignoring it so we can talk about the inaugural list of influential 100 Asian Americans. It was put out by goldhouse.org, and they have a whole, actually, let me see if I can find the list that I meant to pull up earlier. They had a selection committee, and the A100, it says it honors the most impactful Asian American and Pacific Islanders in culture, intending to go forward every May. Honorees pioneer new enterprises as founders, herald new industries in the C-suite, transform culture through historic creative endeavors, and set unmatched global sports records. So I think we're going to put the link in the show notes if you want to check it out. They have a selection committee, and then it's a really, really awesome list of Asian Americans who they decided to honor. And I am really glad that they put together this list, and I cannot wait to see who they put on the list next year.
Oh, this is a great list. I just amusingly will note real quick, I do not recognize Apollo Ono without the soul patch.
Oh, gosh. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, it's kind of disconcerting and unsettling.
Huh. Do you guys have any favorites from the list?
Well, what I like about the list is just that it's not all entertainment and politics, right? There's people from technology, there's authors, there's athletes. I just like the variety we have in this top 100 or top 100 list or 100 people list.
I mean, yeah, it's good. I joked, but I do love that Apollo Ono is on the list just because growing up in Seattle, when I grew up in Seattle, he is a very big and important figure there.
Yeah. I really like that they made sure to include mixed race Asians as well as people who are full on Asian. It obviously, given that two of us on this podcast are mixed race, it feels, and especially because there's kind of a weird thing in the Asian American community where those of us who are mixed aren't always seen as being part of the community at times by certain parts of it. So it's really nice to see people like Chloe Bennett and Tammy Duckworth included in here.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a list, listeners, that you should check out because it is extremely comprehensive, and there are a ton of different people from different backgrounds on here. It's really, really well put together.
Yep. And speaking of mixed race people, let's talk about Jessica Pava.
Hooray!
See, like I did that one?
Yeah, that was good. It was good.
I totally planned it. I did not plan it. All right, so our discussion topic this month, we're going to be talking about the one, the only, Blue 3, Testor, Jessica Pava, whatever you want to call her. She has a lot of names. I'm actually kind of impressed with how many names they managed to pick up for this one very minor character in the film. But we're going to talk about her. She's played in The Force Awakens by Jessica Hedwig. What were your guys, do you remember what your first reactions were when you heard that she had been cast as a pilot or that she was even going to be in The Force Awakens at all?
I can't remember distinct thoughts other than just incoherent glee.
Yeah, I think it was there was a lot of attention on Twitter when it happened, and I think a lot of us who follow pilots specifically were excited because not just that she had been cast, but that she would be a pilot as well.
I suspect that my first reaction was probably along the lines of, ooh, cosplay plans.
That's fair.
I stay on brand. What can I say?
Yeah, that's very on brand.
But I haven't managed to make a Jess Hedwig costume or a Jess Pava costume yet, which I'm actually very curious to know if they named the character before or after they cast Jessica Hedwig. Like, were they so strapped for coming up names that day that they just looked at her like, okay, you're going to be this pilot. We haven't named her yet. Okay, we're going to take your name and just change one letter.
I want to say there was a behind the scenes thing. Don't quote me on this, obviously, but
we're going to.
Yeah, well, I'm on the air right now, but I think her name in like the movie credits was Testor, and I think Jessica may have come from Jason Fry writing Weapon of the Jedi, the prologue sequence, and maybe I think actually naming her after the actress because maybe they didn't have a name yet. I'm not sure.
Huh. I hadn't heard that before.
I could be making that up, but I have this memory of that.
At the very least, I do believe you're right in that Jessica isn't listed in the credits of the film.
No, she's in the credits.
But she's Testor, right?
But listed as, I mean, the name Jessica.
Yeah.
Isn't listed.
Or is it just Testor?
Well, I'm going to have to watch The Force Awakens later to confirm that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Such a burden.
I know.
Okay, I can speak English. It's fine. So in The Force Awakens, you know, she's kind of more in the background. She's Blue 3. You know, she's one of the pilots we see flying above Takodana. She makes it out of there alive. She makes it out of the Battle Starkiller base alive. Did we expect her to survive?
I mean, people flying X-Wings have a really, really low life expectancy. Half the original trilogy is people having like cockpit shots as they're being blown up. So I was pretty surprised, but pleasantly surprised that they didn't introduce her and then blow her up immediately.
Yeah, I kind of figured it'd be a coin flip going into the film if she lived or not. And I was also pleasantly surprised that she not only made it that, but we got to see her in the little celebration at the end there on the base.
I also like trying to watch in the various scenes, see if I can spot her running by. Because I think I've spotted her at least once in the scene when they first get back from Takodana. I mean, obviously everyone's staring at the bromance, but I think I see her in the background. It's always fun to try and see if I can get a better look at her.
I mean, I'll own up to always spending more time looking at the background pilots in any Star Wars film than actually what's in the foreground that I'm supposed to be paying attention to.
And you know what, Brian, given that like that Poe Dameron is in the foreground of some of these pictures, I'm very surprised.
That's
very impressive.
I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, but I have my brand, too, that I have to adhere to.
You do, but your brand is also looking at Oscar Isaac and going,
I mean, this is true, but my minor background pilot brand is a much older brand.
That's true. That's very true, and also why we're friends. All right, come on, guys. Help me out here. Just hit me with your thoughts about Jess from Force Awakens. You got to have something here.
I mean, I'm actually glad how much we saw her. Granted, they're like 1 or 2 second shots, but she was like at least during the Starkiller battle, she seemed to be like the go-to. I mean, as much as we saw Poe, we also saw a lot of Jess as like the go-to reaction shot of a Rebel pilot or Resistance pilot.
Yeah, just how cool was it to see not just a woman, but a woman of color behind the controls of an X-Wing in a feature-length Star Wars film. 10 years ago, I would have never thought I'd ever get to see that.
Well, I kept thinking back to like Return of the Jedi, right, where they had the women X-Wing pilots who were cut.
Yep.
From the movie, and I think that was part of my original reaction to hearing about Jessica Henwick being a pilot. I was like, finally, it's 2015, and they're rectifying their mistake from 1983. It's about time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Didn't they dub over one of the yes. women's voices?
Yeah, like
one
an A-Wing pilot.
Yeah, the A-Wing pilot. If you freeze the shot there, you can see that's a woman behind the controls, but they dubbed over her with a man's voice for some inexplicable reason.
Thanks, Star Wars. Did we all read Jason Fry's Weapon of the Jedi before we saw Force Awakens?
I read it after.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to pretend you read it before, Brian.
Sure, I can do that.
We all knew about Jess the fangirl, though, right?
Oh, yeah, I was aware of that.
Yeah, I was like, you're married to Nancy. There's no way she didn't tell you about that. Did Jess's fangirling of people like Luke Skywalker, did that help influence how you saw her in the film?
I won't lie, it did a bit. Like, as soon as I left the theater, I was thinking of all these amusing little headcanons of conversations she might have been having during this film. And it amused me to no end, because you know she'd be aware of the Millennium Falcon, and getting to see that must have just blown her mind a little bit.
I think some of my favorite fanfics might have been the ones where like Jess and Rey ended up meeting, and then they just got to fangirl together because, you know, Rey's whole, this, you know, the Millennium Falcon, you're Han Solo. Can you imagine the two of them together just following Han around and being like, okay, but war stories. Okay, just but tell us more war stories.
I have to admit that was for a very long time one of my favorite TFA fanfic subgenres.
It's a good one. It's very charming and wholesome.
Oh.
As opposed to some of the other fanfic that I definitely don't read or write.
No, no. I've never read any of those.
Nope.
Nope.
What about you, Jay?
No, I definitely did not read any of those.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to call you on and say, yes, you did. But that was not the question I was actually asking.
It was inflicted on me, but okay. So, back to Jess Pava.
Yes.
I don't remember when it dawned on me that Jess Pava, the character from Weapon of the Jedi, was the same as the pilot in The Force Awakens. I don't remember if it was after I saw the movie or before, but whatever point it dawned on me, I remember being really surprised and excited that we actually got that character, the particular Luke Skywalker fangirl, was the pilot we saw in the movie, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I like that she totally knew how to like keep her cool when she was flying and not get all like, "Ooh, you know, we're flying support for the Millennium Falcon." Which I was like, I liked that part.
No, she's all business when she's behind the flight stick, but she'll fangirl off duty, and I for one appreciate that.
Fangirl off duty, I like that. That's a good way to phrase things. So I appreciate that very much, Brian. Okay. I think it's safe to say, though, that where Jess gets the most characterization and where we've seen her the most has been in the Poe Dameron ongoing comic by Charles Soule, with art first by Phil Noto and now by, I'm going to butcher his name, I'm so sorry, Angel Unzueta? I don't have the copy on hand, but it's something close to that. So we've all been reading the comic, right? I think, Brian, you're actually more caught up than either Jay or I are.
I'm up to date.
Going to the comic store today was hard. overall impressions, though. We'll start with the comic itself. How have we felt about the comic itself?
For me, it's one of the better ongoings that Star Wars Comics has had over the last several years. It's definitely a comic that's focused on much more minor characters, but I've really enjoyed it, especially after you get through, I think, the first four or five issues with the weird egg thing.
Oh, the egg.
Yeah, the egg. The egg. After that arc, it really took off.
Ryan, do you like to say, or at least feel, minorly responsible for this comic existing, given that it happened to be announced months after we started the Write in Letters to Marvel campaign for an X-Wing book.
I'd like to personally take at least 0.5% of the credit for that happening.
I think that's fair. Nancy can take another 0.5%. I'll take another 0.5%. It's good. It all works out.
Perfect. Collectively, Tosche Station gets 1.5% of the credit.
Yes. I'm very proud of us.
I am extremely proud of us.
Jay, how about you? How do you like the book?
So I've fallen behind on it like I've fallen behind on every comic, but I did read the first couple of arcs, I think, and it reminded me a lot of the old X-Wing books, not just subject matter, but the fact that it had, you know, good villains, interesting villains, a good set of side support characters, even though I think the development of them may have continued after I stopped reading the comic. But I really enjoyed the art style. I really enjoyed the focus, the way they were pre-TFA, but still gave us, you know, a look forward to what would happen with the characters and then filled in backstory as we went along too, with the flashbacks of Jakku and everything like that.
Yeah, it was pre-TFA, but it didn't feel like it was rushing to connect the dots. It was content being in its own little bubble of time and just doing interesting things with it.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that they connected to TFA as soon as they did.
Yeah, I thought they had a lot of room, because I remember I had long since fallen behind, but I remember seeing on Twitter that they were finally catching up with the movie, and I think what they're doing post TLJ now or something like that, or are they going to?
Yeah, so how it's working is it's essentially using immediately post TLJ as a framing device of Poe telling Rey and Finn what he was up to during The Force Awakens when he was off screen. And it's really clever and works really well and gives and scratches that itch of, okay, I need to know what happens next, because the movie just ended here. Help. So it gives you a little bit of that without sort of ruining the anticipation for 9.
Oh, so it's almost like Weapon of the Jedi, where it has like that framing story that's contemporary, but then the main story is still back during TFA, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many episodes, or sorry, issues they have planned for going through TFA. And then I also wonder if they're going to try and do something like that during The Last Jedi, since, I mean, they're split up, but we saw what was going on with Poe a little more. Yeah, my question is, because there's a lot of time before episode 9 comes out, and I'm just curious as to like how far into, I mean, granted, comics can be canceled at any time, but it seems that if they were going to cancel the book anytime soon, that they would have done it after issue 25, which was where we caught up, essentially. Yeah, issue 26 is where
it would have been a perfectly fine stopping point if they wanted to stop it.
Yeah, so I'm just, it seems like they intend to keep it going a little while longer. And up through, I guess, episode 9, but I'm curious if they're going to actually let them go into unknown territory before the movie comes out.
I mean, they potentially could if they do what some theorize and take a pretty major time jump between 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Plus, I think, you know, with the sequel trilogy, we're in such unusual territory for Star Wars. Like, back in the prequel era, it was normal for there to be, you know, EU books and comics filling in the gaps between the movies. And, you know, they had less coordination back then, maybe more vague ideas. But I think now that they know sort of where they're going and they have had practice coordinating this, they might be more comfortable telling inter-movie stories before 9 comes out.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But let's talk about the book itself a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Jess is in it. And this is also apparently going to turn into a Poe Dameron book club in addition to talking about Jess. So if you haven't read the comic, number one, why not? Sorry. Nancy, if you're listening to this, because I don't like comics is not an acceptable answer. she's going to throw something at me when she hears this, but given that I'm seeing you guys in a couple weeks, she'll probably just throw
something at me by proxy for now.
Yeah, or she'll just wait and hit me in a couple weeks.
No, there we go.
It'll be fine. I'll have deserved it.
Nancy, dear, my Comixology account has all of them. You can just log in at any time.
Point is, if you're not reading the book, you should be. So it starts with basically Black Squadron being assembled. Leia goes, hey, I need you to find Lor San Tekka, which is still, that's a very Star Warsy name, I gotta say.
It is one of the most Star Warsy names that has ever been produced.
And it's so good.
It is.
But amongst the people that Poe grabs, so he gets Jess from the movies, obviously. He gets Snap, a.k.a. good old Temin, also from the movies. And then I thought this was very clever of Sol to do. The other two main members of the squadron he gets are Lulo, who was from Greg Rucka's Shattered Empire comic. And then Kari Koon, who is from Greg Rucka's Before the Awakening, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah. So he pulls together a cast of basically like existing pilots instead of, you know, I mean, obviously he creates some new ones, but then he just gives depth to all of them. Let's start with the relationships with the other pilots. How do you guys feel about those? Like, I just want to start by saying I really love that there is no competition per se between Jess and Kari.
Yes, I very much appreciate that. I very much appreciate that angle. But
sorry, I don't have anything to contribute on this section.
That's okay.
You've read the first two parts of the comic, Jay.
It was a very long time ago.
I gave everyone their reading. I said, review the comic. Did I do it myself? No, but I've read it recently.
I came to class prepared, at least. I like what Jay said earlier, and mostly what I love about this comic is that the dynamics feel like the old X-Wing books. And it's so character driven, with each pilot having their own very distinct voice and personality, that it's this ensemble pilot cast, which is one of the big reasons I'm in Star Wars fandom, thanks to those X-Wing books all those years ago. And I love that that spirit feels like it lives on in these comics.
You know what it really hit me that the spirit lived on was, I think it was like issues 13 and 14. They were the ones that came out right. I know one of the issues came out right after Celebration last year, because I talked to Sol about it at the convention. But it was the one where, spoilers, guys, but it's from a year ago, Lulo dies. And then the next one is the funeral for him and everyone sort of figuring out how to cope. And those two issues made me go, oh my God, this is 100% the spiritual successor. Like, mm-hmm. I can imagine both Mike and Aaron just nodding along and being like, yep, we approve.
I will say, in reading these comics, it makes me incredibly sad that Aaron Alston never got a chance to write Poe, because in the way that Charles Soule writes Poe Dameron, you know that if Aaron ever got a crack at Poe, it would have been something special.
Oh, man. That would have been good.
Alas.
Jay, are you really not going to say a single thing about anything during this section of the podcast?
I mean, I guess I can, you know, second the Aaron Alston sentiment.
Given killing me, buddy.
You know, cast here. But I'm. It's been a while, and I remember the Imperial stuff too.
Of course, if you want to talk about Imperial
Agent,
stuff.
If you want to talk about Agent Terex, I can do that.
Agent Terex is,
and the Karen Spike. Like, I'm all over that.
Agent Terex is one of my favorite villains of the whole post-Disney era.
He's so good. I love so all of his good interactions with everyone in the squad.
There's this song by Mike Snow called Genghis Khan. And
oh, God, I knew you were going to bring that up.
If you have read this comic, go listen to that and tell me if that is not Poe and Terex right there. I'll wait, because it's so them.
And of course, it's not just the antagonism with Poe. He also had the antagonism with Phasma that I particularly enjoyed. He was a troublemaker for everyone.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Oh, it was so good.
Terex was just a troublesome little shit, and I loved it.
Oh, man. Back to Jess, though, since we should actually focus it on Jess, I guess. I think two of the things about her that stood out to me were, well, first of all, we got some hints as to basically her having childhood trauma, because she reacts very, very poorly when she gets captured at one point. And I think it was during the girls' adventure when it was her, Kare, and Sir Linda.
Yes, yeah, that was the arc.
Yeah, and she, apparently her family, and I guess she has a sister, they were all captured by pirates at one point. And we don't really, if I recall right, see how that ends. But
got no resolution on that one.
Yeah, like, we have no idea if eventually they were let go. We don't know if, like, her parents were killed and she and her sister were put into, like, basically a horrible, horrible situation. And I thought that was very interesting to me, that we saw some of what informs who she is, but we didn't see all of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to more of this arc, because, and I really hope that Charles revisits that backstory soon. After reading issue 27, I think we're heading that direction. I just don't know how many more issues we're going. So in issue 27, what's going on is Poe is telling Rey a little stories about Black Squadron and his pilots. And what they were up to during the Force Awakens, and you get a little bit of backstory on some of them in 27, and I'm hoping that continues in 28 and onwards.
So basically, I really should have gone to the comic store today before this podcast.
27 was really, really good.
Darn it! Okay, I'll go tomorrow.
I'll put it this way. Poe meets a porg.
Of course.
Does he eat it?
No, but Poe meets a porg.
Oh my gosh.
And Rey is very cute with the porg.
Aw. At least they have a snack aboard the Falcon.
Chewie, no.
I wasn't worried about Chewie. I mean, I guess he does need a lot of meat to survive every day, but...
I wonder what the nutritional value of a porg is.
It's probably roughly on par with chicken.
Yeah, so fun fact. yes, and also, have you guys ever seen the weekly show Up at Noon that, Live at Noon? Wait, hold on, I'm going to get the name wrong. I'm going to make sure I get this right. But it's hosted by Brian Altano and Max Scoville for IGN. And they do this weekly video podcast show. And I'm going to find the stupid name because my brain is totally blanking out on it. I want to say it's either Up at Noon or Live, Up at Noon Live or something along those lines. And I'm sorry, Ryan and Max, not that I think you're listening to this, but sorry, I'm getting it wrong. Where they did a whole section around the time that The Last Jedi came out where they tried to figure out how many porgs Chewie was going to need to eat each day.
Oh my god, did they try to work out the mathematical computations of porg nutritional values and Wookiee nutritional needs?
That is the kind of science I like to see in Star Wars.
I love that. I love everything about that.
It's called Up at Noon Live. There we go.
Up at Noon Live.
It one of their episodes from December, I believe, and they spent like 5 minutes working it all out because they were figuring out how many calories per day Chewie needed to intake. We're assuming that a porg was about roughly comparable to rotisserie chicken and went from there.
So good.
It's a delight. So yeah, if you guys want to see that, go over to the IGN YouTube channel and watch it because you deserve that. On a less funny note, let's talk about Jess at her terrible, horrible, no good, very bad luck with droids.
Oh, Jess, sweetie, I'm sorry.
So, for those of you who don't know, Jess Pava is basically a death sentence to her astromechs.
Yeah, so getting being assigned to Jess Pava as a droid is the equivalent of being assigned to Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yeah. None of the droids want to fly with her, and it's really sad.
So it's something that's actually called out by, like, the characters in the comic as well. It's not just the fact that her droids happen to blow up.
Oh, it's very much called out.
It's a whole arc. Wow. And I'm going to have to spoil it for you, because we have to discuss this. So the previous arc that happened, and Jay, I warned you.
Go for it.
Can't say I didn't warn you. So it gets to the point where none of the other droids want to fly with Jess. And she's just like, okay, I get it. I understand. Like, and there was a part where she had a problem because she didn't have a droid. And then BB-8's droid girlfriend volunteers to fly with her. Ivy, right, Brian?
Yes, Ivy.
And everything's great and wonderful, and you know, it seems like it's going to be okay, and they're doing well together. And then the Black Squadron gets themselves into a problem because they're Black Squadron, and what do they do if not get into trouble? And there was a missile locked on, and Ivy ejects herself and essentially sacrifices herself to save Jess. And it is the saddest thing, and I did not ask for those emotions, Charles. I kind of hate you a little bit.
Charles, why? That was mean. That was really mean.
And then the part where she has, like, the little piece of Ivy that was there, and she gives it to BB-8, and BB-8's all sad because his best, you know, his little droid girlfriend is all blown up, and then he takes it over and he attaches it to Black One. And now all I can think about, I'm like, that's really sweet because, you know, Ivy's going to be with them when they fly. Except that all I could think about was Black One goes boom in The Last Jedi.
Damn it, Kylo. I am now even more mad at you.
It's fine. Everything's fine. Like, I think I actually found a rival for Min's relationship with Shiner.
Oh my god, oh, you're wow. right. You're right.
Doesn't it hurt?
I have a sad now.
Blame Charles Soule!
Not fair, Charles. Not fair.
I mean, yes, we're all sad now, but I just really love, though, that he's incorporated things like this and into the story to, you know, flesh out her as a character. Like, now we know more about Jess than, yeah, she's a pilot and she's pretty good. And, oh, yeah, she's a fangirl of, like, all the old heroes, like Luke Skywalker. Like, childhood trauma and bad luck with droids, they make her feel more real, and I love it. Like, I really love it, even though it hurts deep inside. But yeah. Jay, now that we've spoiled the next arc for you, how are you feeling? Does it also hurt your soul?
Well, I mean, it's a little different having it described, but I was just thinking to myself, you know, I really quit the series, or stopped reading rather, not quit at the wrong time, because when I was, you know, the first arcs I read were still pretty Poe focused. So the fact that they actually spent time to flesh out Jess Pava means I should really get to it and see what they did with her.
Oh yeah, it got super ensemble focused.
Yeah, see, there's that one arc where essentially it's the boys go on one mission, or Poe and Snap go on one mission, and then the ladies go on another one. When they're trying to figure out what happened with the spy, which is really cool because Sarah Linda is all like, "All right, we're gonna do this. We're gonna get some propaganda. We're gonna take it back." And then it doesn't really work so well because I can't remember if it's Jess or Kari who's like, "No, we're gonna shoot them. They're trying to kill people. This is not okay."
Very, very X-wing indeed.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of worth mentioning what you said, Jay, because I do really like that it's. Yes, it has Poe's name on it, and yes, he will always be the star because, well, when you look like Oscar Isaac, you are the star. But I like that it almost feels like the more comfortable they've gotten with the book and the more established that it is, that they're willing to take more risks and branch out now that they have an established audience and that they know this book will sell.
That's true, because I guess when they started, you know, you have to focus on the headline movie character because that's maybe what's moving copies. But once you have the freedom in your title to expand further, I'm glad that they're really developing the ensemble.
Yeah. Okay. Brian, any more thoughts about Jess within the comic?
I love that she is super mechanically inclined. She is always tinkering with her X-Wing, and that makes me happy. Girl in her X-Wing.
Yeah. I also really love the relationship between her and Poe. Like, they're just bros.
They are, yeah.
And it makes me happy. Like, I think it's always good when we see relationships between male and female characters that aren't romance-based, because, shockingly, men and women can be friends and just be friends.
What?
This may be news to everyone, but I am not secretly in love with both of my co-hosts. I'm sorry to break it to all of you.
Sorry.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry, listeners. Had to break that to you.
Darn.
That's where most of our ratings came from.
Listen, if they want a show where, like, the podcast hosts are totally in love, they can go listen to Tashi Station Radio circa, like, 2012, 2013, when the co-hosts were very obviously falling in love. Brian.
Listen, just because it happened once on our network does not mean it's a recurring theme.
No, it's true. That once was enough. We're good.
Yeah,
the two of you hold that down.
We're good. We did the sweeps week thing to get some audience. We don't need to do it again.
Well, we have enough married couples who have written for or write for Tashi Station. We got it under control.
We're good there.
We actually do have more than I think most other sites do.
I think you're right.
So we have you and Nancy, and then we used to have, I know, Emily and Shane used to write for us, and now we have Kate and Chris. I am really derailing things tonight. I'm so sorry, guys.
Oh, going off the rails is what we do. I'm cool with it.
It's true. Okay, Brian, I want to clarify something before we go on to the next topic.
Mm-hmm.
We're allowed one F-bomb per episode, right?
You are allowed one F-bomb per episode.
All right, you know what's about to happen? I'm about to drop it. Because Jessica Bama is not in The Last Jedi, and I'd like to know where the fuck is she?
We should be finding that out soon in the Poe Dameron ongoing.
Like, why is she not there? It makes me... Okay, I guess part of me is happy because it means she didn't die. But also, where is she?
Yeah, so it was either the novelization or the visual dictionary or both that confirmed that the other members of Black Squadron had been sent off in disparate directions before the base evacuated to do other things.
And I'm all honestly right. very Go glad ahead. They did that, because it would have been a very typical Star Wars thing to kill, you know, if you don't know a cast member is going to be recurring, especially with Jessica Henwick, maybe it would have been a typical Star Wars thing to kill them off screen or something like that. And I'm glad they didn't, even though they had the whole theme of, oh, the whole resistance is here.
Yeah. All right. So what are you guys' theories? What do you think her and Snap and Kari and everyone else who possibly survived, what do you think they're doing?
My current theory is that all of them have been sent in multiple directions to try and find allies and get them to help. I don't know exactly who Kare and Jess would have been sent for. I know that Snap was sent for Wedge.
I like that. I think they're finding all the ex-senators who are hoarding military forces and slapping them in the face and say, didn't Leia tell you? And then dragging them by their ears and making them join the resistance.
I like that one.
That's a good one. I feel like you took mine. So all I have is, or Brian took mine. So all I have is a totally off the rails idea.
Yes.
Send her to Adamar. They sent them all to Adamar.
We need at least a comic arc, if not a follow-up novel for this.
Uh-huh. They need munitions.
Exactly.
And volunteers. And
you think the First Order isn't also going to send some people there? I mean, I bet that... Oh my god, I just came up with a good book idea. It's Starfighters of Adamar version 2, where Black Squadron goes, and it's Kare, Jess, and Snap, and maybe Sarah Linda. Go well there, though Sarah Lynn is probably better suited for the ELA role. But anyway, so three of them go. And then they get there, and it's like Jagfell is representing the First Order, oh, along God. With like a Finnear Jr. or something like that.
Shut up and take my money.
If any of our listeners are not familiar with Starfighters of Adamar, I'm basically just... Yeah, number one, you should read the book. Number two, I'm basically stealing the plot that Aaron Alston did, where the New Republic and the Empire both sent envoys to this planet that really, really idolizes pilots, because they had like a ton of weapons there and they needed those weapons to help them win the war. So that is my new theory, and I'm sticking to it.
I'm here for it.
It fits perfectly, honestly.
Hashtag call me Marvel. Okay, so we know she wasn't in The Last Jedi. But I guess the question comes, what might be next? And then from what Brian's saying, it sounds like she'll have more of a role in the comic, obviously. But we sort of have two different directions we can look at. And I guess let's go forward first and talk about episode 9, because Nancy decided to tell something to KanjiCast and asked, assuming Jess is in 9, in all caps, she better be, what do you hope to see from her character?
I hope that she gets to play the cool, badass Wedge role at Endor.
Ooh.
Oh, yep, I was going to say squadron leader for sure.
Yeah, just in charge of an entire squadron, and is just one cool badass that's... Nope, I know things are going to shit all around us, but I got this.
I like that idea. So, like, everyone in Black Squadron gets their own squadron?
Yeah, I think they'd either all be wing commanders or squadron leaders.
Yeah, because they're the veterans now. All these kids didn't fly against Starkiller, so they have to show them the ropes and show them how it's done.
Nice. That would be good. Oh, hey, Brian, someone bought a Tosche Station t-shirt.
Really? Huh.
Yeah.
Was it one of our staff members?
I have no idea, but I just got an email alert.
Okay.
If it was you, someone listening, thank you for buying a t-shirt. I think that if she gets a new designation, I really want her to be, if they're going to stay with colors, I want her to be Red Leader.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Well, number one, it's like the history to it. And number two, because out of universe, Jessica Henwick is Chinese and red is an important color in Chinese culture. So, you know, color, happiness and all that. So I think it would be very fitting.
Well, I think that would also make sense, because if we're going to be using the Endor designations as well, and if Poe's flying, that probably would make him Gold Leader.
Ooh. Oh, that'd be cool. Oh, I like this. Can Zay Miko be Blue Leader?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm honestly surprised you didn't include her on her Your Atomar group somehow.
As like the ELA being person. Good. Well, no, because she got sent to the Outer Rim. Remember her and Shriv?
But Adomar's in the Outer Rim.
I was being good, Jay.
This is not the honestly, podcast for being good.
Listen, I feel like we should be impressed that we got, what, 45 minutes of this podcast before I made an Inferno Squad reference.
That's true. That's a new record.
Okay. And then on the other side of things, we have the recently announced Star Wars Resistance, which we know basically nothing about, except there's going to be pilots, and it looks really cool. So we had two different listener questions. Diana asked, if Jess shows up in the new animated show, what do you want to see? And then Sal asked, what kind of thing do you hope to see her up to in Star Wars Resistance? So same question, just from two different people.
Oh, boy. I mean, I hope we see all of Black Squadron in Star Wars Resistance. But as for what Jess is doing, she has shown an aptitude in the comics, especially in the latest issue, for being kind of a wizard at unorthodox starfighter modifications. And I would love to see her show up to conjure up something for this reconnaissance squadron.
So I don't know what they're planning to do with this show, but it would be cool for her to be like a recurring character, because I'm sure they're gonna have a new cast of younger characters, something like that. But her having her be one of the maybe along with the rest of Black Squadron recurring mentor / adult level characters would be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's certainly a history of that in Star Wars animation, of just mentor recurring characters coming in and out of the episodes.
It'd be really cool if they were able to weave, not like weave it in necessarily, but to have the comics sort of line up with the show. You know what I mean? Like, oh, hey, Black Squadron's here today, and have like name drops of, yeah, this egg thing we just found. Like, that was weird. Or like even a name drop of like Agent Terex or something like that.
Remember the egg thing? We don't talk about the egg thing.
We never talk about the egg thing. Oh, what if Terex is in this?
Oh, my God.
That would be magnificent.
If Terex were like the main baddie. That would
I
be.
I don't think it's going to happen, but oh, man,
that would be so cool.
He should at least guest in an episode as the villain. You know, if they can't make him the meat baddie, give him an episode.
Yes, definitely. Especially if it's something like a little bit earlier on, because we don't. Jess is one of the characters we don't really know, like when she joined the Resistance. So, like, for all we know, she could have been one of the first people when Leia decided to form it. You know, she could have been there day one going, all right, I'm in. Like, just tell me what you need me to do. So it would be really cool if we saw her there in the early days. But I really, Brian, I really like your idea of her helping out with the mechanical stuff.
Yeah, that would be neat. I think that would work well for her. So I had another thought about Snap in this that I'll just throw out there because it's fun. Snap would be a recurring character, and each time he shows up, just in the background are these B1 parts that are slowly getting assembled into a droid. Just
Oh, God damn it.
Each time, just a little further along.
Oh no. I love it. Oh no. I already cried enough from glee and also tears. Oh, that'd be so cool though. Oh man, can you imagine Jess getting to interact with Mr. Bones?
I need it. I need it.
If anyone is listening to this who can do fan art, please draw me a fan art of Jess and Mr. Bones hugging.
So if we're going wide stream with our suggestions, what if Ray Sloan was in here as a First Order person?
God, I hope so.
Hold on, I'm sorry. Jay, is that you admitting that Rey Sloan was with the First Order and that she would still be with the First Order this close to The Force Awakens?
I mean, we have to see how the people that she thought were her friends betrayed her and she realized she made a mistake this whole time, obviously.
Oh, Jay. You know what's going to happen now, right?
Sadness and despair for me.
Yes.
It's still not over Empire's End.
Oh, that was a beautiful vlog. It was beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I really hope that we do see, like, in kind of looking at it more out of universe, I hope that Jessica Henwick is able to do it, because I feel like her coming in and recording some lines every now and then would be a lot easier for her to manage than having to, you know, fly to England to do all that recording, especially now with her schedule for Marvel.
Yeah, because they can do that remotely, right? I think they do that now.
Yeah, they actually, he did, Warwick Davis, he did his lines from London, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
the ADR, they should be able to do the ADR anywhere.
Yeah. So, actually, now I'm a heck of a lot more hopeful about this. I think it might happen. I feel good about this. Okay, Jay, your turn. Jay's art quarter, let's do this.
So now to my art corner, and this was an interesting one because, like I said earlier, I hadn't read the comic, but I thought about it and I remembered that we got a good look at Jessica Pava's helmet in both the Force Awakens Visual Dictionary and, of course, in the film itself. And one of the cool things about Rebel pilot helmets is that they have these random sort of symbols on the helmet designs. And I think in the original trilogy, they were just that random, but, you know, the expanded universe like to give backstories to the original trilogy pilots, and I think we can kind of glean our own backstory from Jessica Pava's helmet. The side of the helmet has a yellow rebel symbol, which the visual dictionary calls out as the actual symbol of the Tirfon yellow aces, which is a great
so happy expanded when those universe callbacks are made.
It's fantastic because, you know, we can think about Wes Jensen and all our other EU friends on the yellow aces. But the other thing I noticed when I was looking at the helmet is that it has these little circle chevron designs along the side of the helmet, sort of the round part on the side, that look just like the design on Luke Skywalker's helmet. And even though the visual dictionary didn't really call out this portion of the helmet, I want to say that she herself in-universe styled her helmet design partially on Luke's helmet, because I think she would.
She totally would.
I love that interpretation.
That's awesome. Oh, yep. Man. That was not bad at all, Jay. I like that one.
Thank you.
That was a good art corner. Okay. I also want to look at the out-of-universe impact of Jess. So, obviously, she's not going to have had a big of an impact on kids or viewers like Sabine or Rose, but I think that her being there in the background, especially seeing how many other actors of color and women we saw just in The Force Awakens, it contributes to diversity being normalized, which I think it should be. Yeah,
one of my friends did a Jess Pava costume shortly before The Force Awakens, or maybe shortly after, and she told me that she went to one of the Rebel Legion charity events or something, and a little girl was there, and she punched her brother in the shoulder and said, "See, I told you girls can be pilots too." So that's a great out-of-universe story for her.
Aww.
That's so good. I love that.
That just makes me happy. Although, you know what makes me not happy? This is where you guys say what?
What does it make you happy?
why does Snap have a Funko Pop and not Jess?
I blame the patriarchy.
Can we go smash it? Because I don't agree.
Next time I'm back home, I'll head over to Funko headquarters and lodge a personal complaint.
Good. Please do that. Really, though, I really don't understand why we don't have action figures of Jess. Like, you have them of the Abinado dude. You have it of Snap, but you don't have it for Jess. Really?
Yeah, that was really surprising to me because, like, you know, a lot of randos get action figures and they're easy money. It's, you know, pilots are pretty easy figures to make, so they really should have done it.
Yep. Hopefully they'll fix it if she's in episode 9.
Hopefully they'll do a Force Awakens figure reissue and make one of her regardless.
Oh, yes.
Please. Pretty please. Okay. Finally, we're going to do the our Tell That to Kanji Cast section, because I finally realized, what if I just move this up in the show notes instead of having it down at the bottom? Because all of our questions are always directly about the character. It's fine. It only took me 6 episodes. So Nancy asks us, what do you think was Jess's reaction to Luke's last stand on Crait?
Profound sadness and then annoyance that apparently everyone else got to see Luke but her.
Yeah, I think cares, but also, like, tell me everything. Like, everything. Don't leave anything out.
Yes. She just corners Poe somewhere in the Millennium Falcon and goes, I need to know all the things.
What do you mean you left halfway through?
You don't just leave while someone's having a heroic stand? Come on, Poe! Okay. John asks us, which planets do you wish / hope Jess visits between episode 7 and 9?
Coruscant.
I kind of like it. I kind of love Adamar now.
Okay, aside from Adamar.
Okay. I think she makes a run for Corellia.
Ooh, that would be good.
So I said Coruscant not just to be on brand, but I think that's the perfect place for her to slap senators and bring them back, because they probably are hiding out there or something.
I'll take it. I'll accept it. I hope she goes to Naboo, simply because I suspect that Kari Kun is from there, and then they can just go do a, you know, family reunion for Kari, and she can go look at the pretties and look at the giant window of Queen Amidala. It'll be great. Oh, and then she can fangirl, because that was to say, you know, the battle in Naboo and everything, both battles in Naboo. And she can be like, I heard Inferno Squad was here.
She could bring a squadron of N1 starfighters and say, I know the resistance is low on fighters. Here you go.
All right. I like it. Okay. And finally, I'm going to let you guys answer first, or maybe I won't, because I have a very long rant about this.
I haven't watched Game of Thrones. I have no input.
So Scott asked, who would win in a fight, Nymeria Sand or Jess Pava? And I'm just going to go.
Show.
This is part of my rant, because I am assuming that they mean Nymeria Sand from Game of Thrones, and like as the TV show, and not Nymeria Sand from A Song of Ice and Fire, aka the books. In either way, I think technically Nymeria would win in that situation. Technically, because Jess's Wikipedia page says that she's, I'm assuming this is hand-to-hand combat and like Jess can't be in her X-Wing, but she is in her X-Wing, obviously Jess Pava wins. However, if we are just talking about the characters that Jessica Henwick has played, neither of them win, because holy crap, Game of Thrones did Nymeria Sand wrong. That is not who Nymeria is supposed to be at all. Like, what the hell are you doing? She should not have a whip. That belongs to her older sister, Abara. Just give her her daggers. Let her, you know, she keeps her daggers well hidden. She's not some caricature. Oh my god. Also, neither of them win, because Colleen Wing comes in and just with her katana, it's just like, you're both dead. Shut up and go away. Except, no, her and Jess would be great, but she would just, like, win a fight from both of them, actually. No, Jess and Colleen would get along. So point is, Nymeria Sand sucked at Game of Thrones.
So what you're saying is you have a lot of feelings about Dorne.
I do! Listen, they screwed Dorne up. They were so close. They had it in season 3, and then we actually went to Dorne, and I was just like, what the hell is this? you were almost there and you just screwed things up. The sand snakes, the same thing should not have been hard, but no, yeah, messed up the sand snakes. I'm sorry. I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah. I was going to say with the fighting choreography they did with the sand snakes was not the greatest. So I don't know. I think maybe Jess Pava could pull out a victory just because she'd get Star Wars choreography, which is really good.
That was a way more common measured response than mine.
Well, I couldn't possibly outdo yours, so not even gonna try.
I just have a lot of feelings about the sand snakes. It's not my fault. Also, actually, you know what? Jessica Henwick gets a raw deal a lot of the time. I would just like to point that out because, number one, she should have had a bigger role in The Force Awakens. Why? Because Jess Pop is awesome. Secondly, Nymeria Sand was not how Nymeria Sand should have been in the Game of Thrones show. Third of all, oh my god, Iron Fist was painful, and she deserves so much better. Her and Colleen Wing deserve so much better than that show.
Well, she's such a good actress, and they're underutilizing her in everything.
She should have been Iron Fist.
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have any last thoughts about Jess Pava that aren't me ranting about the parts of Game of Thrones and the MCU that make me mad?
I mean, I said it before, but it is impossible for me to overstate just how big a deal it was to see a woman of color, an Asian woman of color, behind the flight controls of an X-Wing.
I'm going to say that I have clearly learned my lesson today and should not have fallen behind in the comics, so I'm going to read all about Jess Pava, and you should too.
And honestly, I don't think I can say anything better than that, so I'm not even going to add any last thoughts to this. All right, point is, Jess Pava, awesome. Thank you guys all for sending in your questions. We're sorry the episode's a little later than usual this month. There were issues with schedules and voices, and it's partially my fault, too. It's a lot of it's my fault for us being a couple days later than we meant to be.
My work situation has been nuts the last month, so yeah.
It's fine. Everything's fine. But all right, join us on our next episode. We'll be talking about To Be Determined. It will be one of two things, and if it's the second thing, we're actually going to have a guest on next episode. But we will let you know what the topic is going to be, so you can send us in any questions. Don't forget, if you have any questions for us that you want us to answer on a future episode, or just want to ask specifically about the character, you can tweet them to us via the Tosh Station account, or if you're one of our Patreons, you can ask in the channel.
Excellent.
Brian, that's you now.
I know. This episode of the Kanji Cast has been brought to you in part by you, our Patreon subscribers. That's patreon.com/ToshiStation or Toshi-Station.net, and there's a Patreon link there you can use. we are part of the Toshi Station Network. You can look for the Toshi Station Mega Feed to find all of our great shows. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tashi_Station, official show account. You can find me with Lane Winry, LaneWinree. Jay is Admiral Jello, and Bria is Chaos Bria. On Facebook, we are the Tashi Station Network. Like we said, we're on the Tashi Station Mega Feed on the iTunes Store, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you hear, do leave a review. And you can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. Thanks for coming out for the Kanji Cast. We'll catch you all next time.